Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen, coming to you Tuesday, April 13th, 2004. Greetings. Today you've been listening to the charade that's been ongoing within Congress and the national offices, the parade also of this charade, bringing forward the heads of the U.S. government from both the Clinton administration and the Bush administration, whether it's Condoleezza Rice, the National Security Advisor, or today John Ashcroft, the Attorney General, or Louis Frey, or Tenet, the CIA Director, or Richard Clark from the National Security Council, who was in charge of counterterrorism. And today when we have John Ashcroft saying that the importance in what he had told Condi Rice was that there needed to be decisive action, quote, to find and kill bin Laden. And in former days, the discussion was, why didn't they invade Afghanistan sooner? Why not just have an attack on any country around the world? And in fact, that is what presidential directives did, both under the Clinton administration and now under the Bush administration, when there was authorization to the CIA to go out, not just to for rendition, which means to capture, but to assassinate people throughout the world. On what basis? Ralph, one thing I did while you were methodically listening to these hearings is I went back to prior knowledge, the program we did, Pretext and Foreknowledge of 9/11, May 31st, 2002. And it's startling for those of you who haven't heard it. I thoroughly recommend, because in that we were referring to this August 6th, 2001 memorandum that played such a part in Condoleezza Rice's testimony. Now, I know you've been listening to the complete testimony, so what is your impression of what's been going on today and on the days before?
Well, first of all, it has to be made clear that we are dealing with an effort to confine any discussion within parameters that are completely in keeping with the official fiction about 9/11 and antecedent events. I like to cite the American poet Ezra Pound when he stated that the technique of infamy is to invent two lies and to get people arguing heatedly over which one of them is true. Whether it's Condoleezza Rice or John Ashcroft or Janet Reno or Louis Frey or Democratic senators such as Romer or Democratic Commissioner Benveniste, it's all from within the same frame of lying assumptions that somehow there is this terror network, Al-Qaeda, responsible for everything, as Rice said, from the Achille Lauro, and as Janet Reno and all of them say today, to the USS Cole bombing and the bombing of the embassies in Kenya and in Tanzania, and, of course, the linchpin event that they cite, the 1993 bombing of the World Trade Center. Fabrication from beginning to end. I have to say, frankly speaking, that in the elucidation of who these presumptive terrorists are, specifically Mohammed Atta, it was discussed by commentators on Pacifica about how these are lone terrorists linked to Al-Qaeda, and that the real issue here is how early they were understood to have had this role, and why, with these memoranda indicating it, there was no action taken.
Ralph, it's interesting you bring this up, because today when I was listening to Pretext and Foreknowledge of 9/11, we discussed specifically reports from Newsweek, The Washington Post, and Knight Ridder from September 15th through September 17th, 2001, in which these stalwarts of the bourgeois press were saying that sources that they contacted stated specifically that many of the supposed hijackers were trained on secure military bases, particularly Mohammed Atta at Maxwell Air Force Base and Saeed Al-Hamdi at the Defense Language Institute in Monterey, three of them at the Pensacola Air Station, Newsweek reported, and they spoke to a pilot who told Newsweek specifically that for two decades, Air Force at Pensacola, decades, pilots had been training many of the people who were the supposed hijackers. And then also we refer to von Bülow from German, the German parliament, who had worked with the intelligence services and with East German intelligence.
As a cabinet minister, he was coordinating German intelligence services. The von Bülow interview at the beginning of the immediate events after 9/11 was specific in citing how German intelligence had been monitoring Mohammed Atta in Hamburg, not just monitoring them. German intelligence, through various conduits, was funding these people. Maya, you're quite right. The Newsweek articles and those in the Washington Post, with respect to the training of Mohammed Atta and his colleagues, were not confined to those publications. Knight Ritter gave an even more specific account. It cited that Mohammed Atta had been trained at International Officers School at Maxwell Air Force Base in Montgomery, Alabama. It particularized Abdul Aziz Alamari's training at Aerospace Medical School at Brooks Air Force Base in Texas, that Saeed Al-Hamdi had been at the Defense Language Institute in Monterey, California, and they were all trained at Pensacola Naval Air Station, and that they were put through U.S. Air Force International Officers School at Maxwell Air Force Base, which required substantial security clearances, needless to say. The follow-up on these articles confirmed in the established press the U.S. military training of these people. There isn't the slightest basis for suggesting, as was suggested on Pacifica, that there is no evidence for these associations. On the contrary, so specific was this information and so elaborated upon the data were these articles in the established press, that at the Monterey School, which is a Defense Intelligence Agency operation, the director, Stephen Butler, not just took exception to the training of these people, but wrote an open letter accusing the Bush administration of complicity in the fomenting of the events of September 11th. That is no marginal figure here, but precisely in relation to this evidence, this was a specific, open, and public charge by Colonel Stephen Butler.
Now, von Bülow, who, remember, had been a cabinet minister in Germany and isn't one who's going to speak just off the cuff, he came to a conclusion, and I'm now quoting von Bülow. He said, CIA and state interests of the United States have carried out an operation. I repeat, von Bülow stated conclusively, CIA and state interests of the United States have carried out an operation. Now, once again, when we say we have this charade that's going on in front of the people of the United States, what we do not have them is investigating what elements in the CIA, what elements of state interest did carry out this operation. Instead, what we have is them pandering to Attorney General Ashcroft about the so-called wall that segregates the civil and criminal investigations, and why the Patriot Act, as both Condoleezza Rice and Ashcroft have said, has been such a significant moment in U.S. history, because it pulls down this wall. It allows the government to have roving wiretaps, and yet what they're really looking for is a bringing down even further the wall and eliminating the FISA, the little judicial block on wiretaps and other incursions into the civil rights of people in the United States and our any sense of privacy. And in fact, if you do look at the record of FISA, Ralph, and our listeners, if you look at the FISA, whenever the intelligence agents come to FISA, it's usually just a rubber stamp for their efforts.
Well, Maya, look, every place at which you touch this, these evidentiary hearings of the 9/11 Commission and the people questioning the witnesses from the Commission recite a litany of past events and cite a series of individuals who are imputed to be responsible for the bombings of the World Trade Center and for virtually every single operation that they can recall. Let's just for the moment look at Zacharias Moussaoui, who they are imputing responsibility to for being the 20th putative hijacker. The BBC on July 3rd, 2002, Stephen Kingston in Washington, ran the following story. Quote, the only man charged for September 11th, Zachariah Massawi, has requested the right to testify before Congress. Massawi has stated that he and the suspected hijackers were under full control and surveillance by the Federal Bureau of Investigation prior to September 11th, and that U.S. intelligence agencies allowed the attacks to happen. I'm quoting from the BBC. Latest in a series of handwritten notes written by Massawi to the judge, he stated, I have the relevant information, I have the documentation, I have the proof relating to the conduct and the prior knowledge of the Federal Bureau of Investigation before September 11th. Massawi, the BBC reports, requested the chance to continue to share the evidence with U.S. lawmakers in a public hearing and to provide the documentation of the intelligence involvement in the attacks of September 11th. And he repeatedly stated that he was prepared to put forward documentary information pertaining to this. He went on to present both to the court and to the BBC his insistent demand that he would provide the Congress with the documentation pertaining to the role of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the failure to arrest people that they were running, not just monitoring now, but running, because, quote, they wanted the September 11 attacks to proceed, to provide the excuse to make war in Afghanistan and the Middle East. This is, again, a quote from the BBC article on Massawi. Immediately upon the BBC report of Massawi's statement about documentation of the role of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the judge immediately asked that the court no longer permit any public access to the subsequent hearings on Massawi, and that all court filings of Massawi would be treated as secret, and the public would be barred from the court, as would the media. Now, how is it that the people commenting on these events, citing presumptive responsibility for Massawi as the 20th hijacker, this is not about the August 6th memorandum. The August 6th memorandum is one of a plethora of documentation pertaining to the knowledge in advance of prepared attacks on 9/11. This was not something concealed. They were papering the file everywhere to point people to a presumptive responsibility of demonized terrorists afar to provide the pretext for all that we have been citing over the past years of broadcasting of Taking Aim about long-standing plans for massive permanent war for resources in the Arab East. The San Francisco Chronicle on the 12th of September reported in an article with the headline, Willie Brown got early warning about air travel, that Mayor Brown was scheduled to fly from San Francisco to New York on the morning of the 11th and received on Monday the 10th a call from what he described, and this is the San Francisco Chronicle, the airport security people instructing him not to travel on that day and canceling the flight. The reporters state that the source of the call was from the, quote, security people, unquote. It was later commented by San Francisco Chronicle reporters that Condoleezza Rice was the source of that security warning. The San Francisco Chronicle reported as well on the September 14th that former U.S. Secretary of State George Shultz received a State Department memo issued the week before stating that Americans would be shortly the target of terrorist attacks. 4 days before the attacks on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, the State Department memo specified that the attacks would be on buildings coming from groups with links to Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda. George Shultz was quoted, I don't know the intelligence that lay behind the warning, but they were specific and they had advanced knowledge. He received a notification on September 7th, a worldwide warning, and a private communication from the State Department to former Secretary of State George Shultz. And the series of such things led the San Francisco Chronicle to write a five-column story with the headline, How Could the United States Not Have Known? The article cites the Government of India's intelligence services. It cites the specific intelligence from the Government of India on the attacks of 9/11. It cites the MSNBC reports that Russian President Vladimir Putin had stated to NBC that his government had been warning the United States for weeks of imminent attacks on U.S. Airports and government buildings.
Ralph, in terms of a scenario, in 1993 there was a CIA conference at Langley Field at which they documented the use of planes to attack both the White House and the Pentagon. And you had in Italy, in Rome, Italy, in August of 2000, the transcripts of supposed monitoring of Al-Qaeda figures that spoke specifically of hijacking planes and flying them into the building. Now, remember, these are the transcripts of the so-called telephone calls, and they were published in Corriere della Sera and La Repubblica. This is in August of 2000. But I want to go back a little in history to the setting up of Osama bin Laden and the Al-Qaeda network, because Ahmed Rashid, a correspondent for the Far Eastern Economic Review, described the actual plan that was crafted by the CIA, and that was then 1986, and CIA Chief William Casey. And he committed CIA support to a plan that originally had been developed by the Pakistani intelligence, the ISI, and that was to recruit from around the world people to join an Afghan jihad. 100,000 militants from 50 countries were brought to Pakistan between 1982 and 1992, and it's estimated that 60,000 of them attended the fundamentalist schools where they were trained by British MI6 and the SAS. That's the Special Air Service that's notorious for carrying out terror operations against the people of Northern Ireland. And foremost among the people who organized this, particularly because of his expertise in construction, was Osama bin Laden from the wealthy bin Laden family, which controls the largest construction business in the world. And bin Laden was a very close associate of Hekmet Yar. Ralph?
Well, yes, but since you're citing the longstanding documentation about the Central Intelligence Agency role in setting up what became Al-Qaeda and $6 billion to Gulbuddin Hekmet Yar and to Osama bin Laden, bear in mind, Maya, as you were indicating, that this was essentially not just run by the CIA, but the operational plan was conducted by the ISI, Pakistani Intelligence, namely by General Gul Hamid. And Gul Hamid gave an extraordinary interview and account to the Washington Times and to Arnaud de Borsgrave, who was formerly the editor of Newsweek, in which he stated specifically that from his direct knowledge, this was what he called an inside job of the Air Force Intelligence and the Air Force in the United States and of the Israeli Mossad in conjunction with it. And he, the Arnold de Borsgrave interview is quite remarkable with General Gul Hamid. It was published by United Press International. It is impossible for anyone to deny that this is on the record in the established press. Gul Hamid states, quote, it is clear, this was a plot by United States Air Force officers and their associates in intelligence. The Twin Towers attacked at 8:45. The four flights diverted from their assigned Air Force space, but Air Force jets do not scramble, which is standard procedure. I know these operations. You trained me. Standard procedure. You're telling me that the United States intelligence services allow this to occur? Don't believe it. Within 10 minutes of the second Twin Tower being hit, CNN announced that Osama bin Laden had done it. I am in intelligence. This is a typical police piece of planned disinformation by the real perpetrators. It's not a question of allowing it to occur. It's a matter of organizing it. They attempted to create an instant mindset with the bin Laden Association. It puts public opinion in a trance, Gul Hamid continues, that prevents even intelligent people from thinking for themselves. De Borsgrave is in shock, and he says, well, what about bin Laden? And the man who set up the bin Laden apparatus for the ISI and the CIA states, from a cave inside a mountain, from a peasant's hovel, be serious. He doesn't have the capacity for this kind of sophisticated operation. He is monitored at every moment. He can't use a telephone. He can't use any electronic means of communication. You have four flights diverted from their assigned airspace, not one air controller sounding the instant alarm. In Pakistan, if we had no response to the IFF, the friend or foe identification, we scrambled jets instantly. The aircraft is shot down. No further questions asked. We're talking about the Pentagon interdicted space. This is an inside job. And he elaborates upon this. The interview is as specific as it is long, and it is supplemented by the following information. His successor as director of the Pakistan ISI was General Mahmoud Ahmad. Now, General Ahmad was in Washington in the week preceding September 11th. He had meetings over days with the National Security Council, with the CIA, with the Pentagon, and while there, and this is a part of the record now, General Mahmoud dispatched and directed $100,000 into the account of Mohammed Atta, disclosed in the BBC, disclosed in the Hindustani Times, subsequently confirmed in the Washington Post, leading to the resignation of General Mahmoud. Do you find even the faintest reference to this obvious trail of the hands of U.S. intelligence around these events and these so-called hearings?
And in these hearings, do you have any questioning of the training that went on at Camp Peary, a CIA spy camp in Virginia, where the United States brought young Afghans and people from Egypt and Jordan and African-American black Muslims, where they taught them sabotage skills, writes John Cooley in Unholy Wars, Afghanistan, America, and International Terrorism. And the program was called Operation Cyclone. You don't see them talking about that. Or the training that was done in the New York area itself, the paramilitary training to send people to Afghanistan to join Hikmet Yar. And, in fact, the cooperation that was done with the Green Berets. For, after all, one of the foremost of trainers in 1989 was Ali Mohammed, a Green Beret. That's right, a U.S. Green Beret, who again appeared because he was charged by the United States for the bombings of the U.S. embassies in Kenya and Tanzania. So here we have the connection of the Green Beret and the so-called bombings of Osama bin Laden of the U.S. embassies. And all of these people are connected to the Central Intelligence Agency and the defense intelligence apparatuses, and actually were trained at U.S. military bases and CIA bases here in the United States.
Because what we're dealing here is with organizations established by intelligence, funded by intelligence, entirely permeated and penetrated by intelligence with U.S. operatives in them. The paradigm of this is what has been cited throughout these hearings, cited by Condoleezza Rice, cited by Janet Reno, cited by Louis Free, cited by Ashcroft, cited by Benvenisti, cited by the interrogators, whether it's John Lehman of the Reagan administration, Secretary of Navy, or by Senator Romer or Congressperson Gorelick, all of them associated with the Clinton administration.
Right.
What they're talking about here, Maya, it's 1993. 1993, which is presumptively the work of the blind Egyptian cleric, presumptively a figure associated with Al-Qaeda. In fact, the reality of 93 is profoundly different, because that was an operation carried out by the Federal Bureau of Investigation in New York, and this is part of the documented record in the Village Voice, in the New York Times, in the Los Angeles Times. It was the subject of an article I wrote in 1993 called Who Bombed the U.S. World Trade Center 1993? The growing evidence points to the role of the Federal Bureau of Investigation.
But, Ralph, I would like to go back to the hearings themselves and what I consider to be the real purpose of these hearings. It comes out over and again today, where the reference is made to the language of lawyers and how the language of lawyers restricted decisive action, as Attorney General Ashcroft said, the wall that segregates criminal and civil investigations, the insufficient computer technology, the fact that he needed actually a $580 million new system, and to have cooperation, the new counterterrorism center. What you have here is a breakdown of the civil liberties of the United States. What they really want and what they're leading up to is a new intelligence operation. As Donald Rumsfeld had wanted to set up his own defense intelligence operation, they're talking about the creation, like in England, of MI5, of a new domestic intelligence operation, having the FBI work on RICO-type actions and having a special counterterrorism operation here in the United States that can impose on every aspect of life of the people in the United States. I want to mention that Ralph will be on KPFA tomorrow at 3 o'clock. You can hear which would be at 6 o'clock in New York, and you can hear it at www.kpfa.org. Ralph?
Thank you.